This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded May 19th, 2014, episode 199, Traveling, Technology, Trangam.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gammel of Contextual Electronics.
Reporting from the scene of the crime.
The scene of the stupid friggin' trolley whistles and the Rice-A-Roni and the...
Where are you?
I'm in the 10th floor of a hotel in downtown San Francisco.
Woohoo!
Yeah. I was told not to stay in an Airbnb in the city. It's really expensive here right now. Because it's not just Solid. So I'm here for SolidCon, and it's not just SolidCon though. There's some Cisco thing. The guy asked me a check-in. You know, you can always tell when you get checked in hotels. Are you here for this? I'm like, no, I don't.
No,
some Cisco.
No, I'm
Cisco,
here for this tin pot thing called Maker.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I'm in downtown, and I was at Maker Faire. That was a good time. I'm sure we'll talk about that, but. So there will be trolley whistles and ambulances in the background. I will apologize in advance.
We've all been there, done that ad hoc recording studio. So you're using your little Samson Go mic?
Yeah, and the new so we have a new setup we're sending to our guests as well when I remember to schedule them. And I've captured my own version of that. Hopefully this is what the guests should sound like if they do everything right. I hope it sounds good, or else that would be really dumb, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you can probably hear that my voice is gone, too. I was at the Bring a Hack dinner last night after Maker Faire. Yep. And, hanging out at post-Maker type events, it's just... What do you work on? Let's talk about projects. Let's talk about electronics. Yep. Oh my God, this is the like. Honestly, it's like nerd. It was nerd mecca. It was awesome.
That is a real problem, you know. When you are yapping all day, you know, if you're on a trade show booth or something like that, and you're just continually talking to people all day, your voice does go,
and
you're just ruined by the end of the day.
Yeah, and if at the end of the day you're also having a couple beers and you're talking a little louder because everybody else is talking a little louder, it kind of compounds that effect. So, yeah.
Beer is not good for the vocal cords, by the way. That's why.
You shut your mouth, sir.
Any true, singer or anything does not drink before. Only has room temperature water.
Orange juice. Definitely no orange juice. No orange juice, alcohol.
No milk. Right. Yep.
Yep. Apparently, I'll never make it in broadcasting, Dave.
Right.
But it was great. So Lane set it up for Mosh Park. He actually set the whole thing up this year. It was place turned out great. We probably had they had us outside at first. Probably like 25 people could fit out there.
This is the hack.
Bring a hack. Yeah.
Yep. Bring a hack.
So the one that Jerry started this whole thing a couple years back, and Lane kind of took over the setup this year, and. I'm guessing we had about 120 people there last night. It was pretty insane.
Wow, that's huge.
I mean, we took over half the restaurant.
So you just wander around and mingle? I take it you all wouldn't be sitting at one huge table and, waving to someone right down the other end at 120 people. You would never get to see everyone. That's one of the problems, too.
It was the problem. It was very difficult. I mean, like, I would basically, what I was doing, I was like, I talked to someone about 2 minutes and then, like I'd see someone else and I would introduce the person I'm talking to usually that other person and kind of bounce around and because I wanted to see everyone. I mean, I saw one of my former bosses there. I saw one of my consulting bosses. I saw a bunch of guests there. Ron Kwan was there, Bunny, Ian, Jerry, all of these people, all of the Maker crowd, but also, a lot of a lot of the people. Alicia, Jeff. I mean, it was a really, really good crowd. So, and everybody brought something too, so that's even worse.
Awesome.
Because you want to talk about the project itself. You know, it's like, I want to catch up with these people, but really I want to see what you have in your hand. You know, it's just...
Right.
Yeah, so it was great.
And I assume that the more well-known faces, you'd have a hard time getting to them because everyone would want to meet them, Whereas if you've got a face that isn't recognisable, you know, someone might have heard of you, but you don't have a recognisable face, then, you know.
Man, that's the best part.
So did everyone have dorky name tags or what?
No, name tags.
So you've got to have dorky name tags to break the ice. That's important.
I don't think so. Usually I would do it for, I met a bunch of people, like Noah Zirkin, right? He was actually the guy, Noah is a wearables guy, and he's actually the one that took the picture of Sergey Brin wearing Google Glass on the train.
And okay.
Yeah, like that very first picture of Google Glass, right? And so Noah does glass stuff as well, but he's actually, you know, he's been doing wearables longer than that. And so I saw him, and I'm like looking at it, I'm like, you know, that's what it usually was. Like, you know, you just look at someone, you're like, you look a little different than your Twitter picture, but I'll ask anyways.
Exactly.
You know, so like that happened. The same thing happened with like Zach from Upvoter, right? I was looking at him like, he's wearing an Upvoter shirt. He's got long hair. He's taller than I thought he would. You know, like it was just like that. You know, same thing over and over. Mike Estes, same thing. You know, like, and just like, unless you know someone, right? That's just how the human brain works. Unless you have that image of them actually in real life, you don't make that connection. It's tough to do. Yep. So,
And that's what happens if you've just got a text blog or a Twitter photo or something, or, you know, people have only seen you in the odd photo, you know, whereas I'm, you know, instantly recognizable because I'm on video, and you would be if people have been following you via video. But if they've just been following you via your Ampower photo, you know, then it's one of those.
That was a thing. I always tell people to change your photo before you go to conferences, too. Because I had that weird, like, off-color one before where it was, like, blue and white and red.
Yeah,
and my hair looks red. And my hair is definitely not red. It was, like, a photo I modified. And that's stupid, right? You're never going to...
Right. No, of course.
You know, you should take a current photo right before you go to a conference. So it's like, this is me. It's almost like, this is what I'll be wearing this day, you know?
Yeah, exactly. This is what I'll be wearing. That makes sense. Totally.
Yeah.
You know?
So, but, you know, it's a little awkward at first, and usually I guessed right, so it was it was good.
Cool.
Oh, good time.
Although you guys weren't hard to miss with that backpack thing sticking out of your bloody backpack.
Yeah, so I was hanging out with the Hackaday guys because they're part of Supply Frame, and I've been working there part-time as well, and the whole contest and everything. And so Mike, the managing editor, he made this foam... it's called the Jolly Wrencher. It's the logo for Hackaday, and he was wearing it around. And I tell you, I think I'm going to be seeing more of that stuff at Hackaday or at Maker Faire next year because it's so easy to be recognized. Like honestly, people would walk up. It was literally it was brilliant. I mean, like we were making fun of him beforehand. And by the way, Mike's last name is the C S Z C Z. Do you know how to say that?
No, I cannot pronounce names. I don't even try.
It's Stish.
Mike
Stish. That's how you say it.
There you go.
Yeah. Pretty crazy, right? Anyways, Mike's great. And so I got to hang out with him all weekend. And it was a lot of fun. We did a lot of videos and stuff like that. And, you know, and much like podcasting, you know, I always say podcasting is one of the biggest life hacks I've ever done. But between podcasting and...
Life hack.
It's a douchey term.
There was an article about that. Somebody posted it somewhere like, stop calling everything a hack.
Sorry,
you know, it's life hack.
How about this? It's a big secret. It's a not so secret secret, right? Podcasting and pretending you're media when you go to conferences, all of this stuff.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah,
it makes a huge difference.
It's a way to meet people, right? It's an excuse to meet people. And at conferences, you know, like when so walking around Maker Faire, you know, it's no longer like, hey, can I hear about your project? It's like, hey, I'm from blank. Tell me about your project.
I'm from the world's biggest.
Even if it's not from I'm from the Amp Hour. It's I'm from this blog that sounds somewhat sort of official. Tell me about it. Right? There's a whole different. I mean, it's just like human stuff, right? It's this whole idea of authority it's a great way to meet people easily. You know, honestly.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm from. If it, not, it wasn't the EEV blog, I'm from the EDD blog, right? You know, I don't know. But like,
it
something
doesn't matter.
Exactly. It doesn't
official,
matter.
You know.
Yeah, and we'd love to talk to you about it. We'd love to interview about it. You know, like that's just a great way to strike up a conversation. It's you know, especially as a nerd, as an introvert, you know, having a crutch to lean on, right? When you have like, it's almost like a script. It's like, Yeah, okay. And then once you get to talking about projects, that whole feeling gets, you know, when you start to get into the electronics, you know, tell me about the processor on board or whatever. Then it's just flow, right? I mean, it's just talking to people about what you were always talking about, you know, or thinking about. So that's the best part of Maker Faire. I mean, hearing about these man, there were some great ones. There was some great ones. So yes, it's been a long weekend, and it's not stopping. Right. I'm here through Saturday. I'm in the Bay Area through Saturday. So
excellent. Can we have a Jerry update? Where's she at with her cast AR? Get to actually use it?
No, I still haven't.
Fail.
I mean, there was a line out the tent for the entire time, and she's super big. Yep. I didn't see her until bring a hack, basically, until the dinner at the end. Right. I saw her on the first night as well, the Friday night dinner as well. And so she said they're they've got tooling just about done. So like all the plastics and stuff.
Yep.
And I think she's on her third or fourth rev of the board. She keeps updating stuff. And it looks really good. Yeah. I mean, she keeps compressing that chip and everything. So, yeah, she's doing good though. I mean, her and Rick, I got to meet Rick finally too. And, you know, Rick's real nice.
Right. Cool.
But yeah, it was great. And so I was hanging out with Bunny a little bit last night. I don't know if you saw
Twitter
pictures.
That. He got his hair cut or something because his long hair. What, was it all chopped off? Did he get shaved or what?
No, he said, so I don't know if it was actually a stretch. So Bunny's been doing this Novena project, right? And last I had talked to him, it was like 180 or 200,000.
Yeah, it was like
100
and something K. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they had to hit 250, and I was like, oh crap. In the past 2 days, it went from about, they hit their goal, and then like in the past 2 days, it jumped to 700,000. And I'm not sure if it was
linked somewhere, obviously, on some tech geeky blog, probably, you know.
Yeah, maybe. Like,
or forum,
somebody,
and that's it.
Someone interviewed him, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so I don't know if he added as a actual stretch goal or if it was like somebody he just joked with, but he said he would cut his hair into a bob. You know what a bob is?
It's like that 1960s look that the women had, you know?
Usually it's like shorter in the back and then it kind of tapers forward. It's a little longer in the front. Yep. It's a very effeminate look. Maybe there's men out there that have it, but anyways, he did it as a joke. And then he hit 700,000 that night, and the campaign ended. And so Lenore from Evil Mad Science, we got some scissors and she cut a bunch of his hair off. So
nice.
And he was, there may have been drinking involved. It was,
right.
It was,
yeah, exactly.
It was great. So,
oh, terrific stuff.
Lots of fun. And you know, man. So Marcus was here. Marcus Chappie, another
we've had on the show.
Yes, and I probably be hanging out with him later tonight, drinking with a bunch of Aussies from the area. But
and you're afraid, apparently.
Yes,
you're afraid to go drinking with a bunch of Aussies. You pissy. You pussy.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty well established that I'm not cut out for that kind of lifestyle. So
you talk the talk, but you don't walk the walk.
That's
right.
Yeah, I enjoy one or two beers.
I like
there.
Beer. Yeah, right.
I like beer. I don't like that much beer. Anyways, so Marcus was there, and we were chatting about how you need to get your ass over there next year. Over here, rather. I guess it's here.
Yeah, try doing it when you've got it. I bet you every single bloody person there is young and single and doesn't have a three-year-old.
No way, man. Ron Kwan was there, man. He was he's not young. He's finishing up his book. He was here, and there's lots of people here.
Does he have a three-year-old, and does he live in Australia?
No, but there were a couple Aussies, so.
Yeah.
You have no excuse. Sorry.
Eh.
I was meeting people from my course as well. So someone from Bolivia.
Yeah, cool.
Someone from Switzerland. So, I mean, it's just everyone. It was great.
Excellent.
Nerd Mecca.
But it almost sounds like it's too big. You know, there's too many people to see. So you don't get to spend quality time, you know, hanging out with, you know, everyone. Like, you know, imagine if I went there and there's like, you know, 15 people who have been on the Amp Hour show, right? And how do I get to meet and spend time with every single one of them?
Yeah,
it's almost impossible. You know, shake their hand and say hi. See you. I got to go talk to the next person. You know?
That is true, but I don't think that's a reason not to do something. I mean,
oh no. I'm just It's the kind of thing I was getting. That is, you know, like it's not the be all end all. Go in there and you know you get to hang out with 10,000 other people. It's almost too much. So I like the smaller shows. You know, where I can hang out and you know talk with someone for a solid hour.
Yeah. No, I do agree with that. Mm. I definitely do. That is just a side effect of it. I mean, it's any conference, right? You can never meet everyone at a conference, a bigger conference. Yeah. Same thing will happen at SolidCon. Same thing will happen at, you know, DEF CON, all the big ones. You know, you always have to prioritize. Like, I didn't catch any talks. I mean, like, that's always the problem, though. But it's kind of what you want to do and what you want to see. So you kind of just have to pick and choose. I mean, like, I remember I always watch coverage on like Tested of like like Comic-Con, right? You know, like that is such a huge, I mean obviously it's not electronics, but that's such a huge conference, and you can't like, and they talk about that too, where they say, you know, if you actually want to go to a talk, especially at something like that big, you have to wait in line for 4 hours, right? And you actually are giving
and
up
and you miss the rest of the show.
And I mean, there's always those small trade-offs. You know, if you want to catch a show with, you know, if you want to get a front row seat for something to make your fare, you do have to be there soon. You know, you have to, you know, prioritize. And I think the only thing is that, you know, honestly, looking at it year to year, so I've been here 2 years ago now, and now a lot of this stuff is the same. So
yeah, of course,
it is possible to prioritize, but you have to know that you're going to, you know, possibly come back. So maybe someone overseas, it would be tough because you wouldn't have the opportunity to come back as much. I mean, but
see, well, that's the thing, right? If I went there, right, I would have to weigh up. It'd probably come down to a choice about actually getting footage and covering the show, which people would expect me to do. Oh, Dave's going all the way to the US for the Maker Faire. You know, we expect, you know, top quality half hour polished video of the whole summary of the whole event. Well, if I spend all day doing that, I don't have time to see things. I don't have time to meet and talk to people. You know, it's just, it's one of those trade-offs.
Well,
I can't
do
everything.
You got to try and combine that as much as you can, right? And that's what me and Mike were doing mostly. We were trying to meet people we wanted to meet and see things we'd heard about already and stuff like that. So,
So, you know, and they'd want to see interviews and they'd want to see everything else. So, yeah, that's, you know, from that aspect, I'm kind of glad I'm not going, you know, because it would just be so much work and
that's
pressure.
That's justification.
And flat out.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But you do know where I'm coming from, though. So,
of course. Yeah, I mean, I do. Yeah. It's fine. But, yeah, it's been good. I mean, I saw a lot of interesting new tools. Actually, there's some posted on our links as well. What else was on there? So we have our links from this week. Dave and I figured that, you know, we would be talking mostly about
crapping on Maker Faire all day.
Yeah, this kind of stuff and everything. And oh, geez, where is this thing now? Here we go. Voltset. So I got to see them. Voltset's a new cell phone, tablet, or basically it's a multimeter connected
another
multimeter.
One. Yeah, how many of those have there been now?
I know of three. So I know of...
it's at least three or four. This would be the fourth one, I think, that I'm aware of.
Yeah, so I know of Redfish. That was one from a couple years ago, actually, because that was when I was still at Keithley. I remember seeing that one. And then Mushimeter, and I got to meet Eric, the guy that does the Mushimeter at Maker Faire. And then Voltset's the new one, and I only got to talk to their marketing person. I didn't get to talk to the technical person.
Ah,
so,
well, I got that.
Yeah. I mean, it was nice.
They have a marketing person?
I think it's probably, you know, more of a business, probably a business person. You know, I think it was like a three-person team.
Right, so they've got capital funding from somewhere if they've got someone like that on the staff, so to speak, in quote marks, you know?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of this stuff with, you know, people starting with teams. You know, you're starting with teams versus a... It's not a bad idea, you know, starting with a startup team.
See, that seems to be like the way everyone's doing it. You know, all of these colleges now, as you call them in the US, have got, you know, these courses, these entrepreneurial courses, right? And everyone takes them thinking, oh, yeah, I'll get rich, I'll be the next Google, you know. And then they go off and they start these companies and they think that the only way to start them is to get capital and then get an advertising person, get a PR person and get a business manager, get a CEO and get a, you know, like, goodness, how about just you know, working late nights,
making a good product,
producing
yeah.
a product, you know, yeah. and then seeing where
no,
it
I
goes.
Agree. I agree.
Yeah, it's starting to bug me a little bit.
Well, you know, actually, so I learned about this a little. So I've been reading about this and talking to people about this a little bit more. I didn't realize, actually, maybe we've talked about this on the show before, but some of that stuff actually, you need to have, like I always kind of got bugged by, like, the fact that someone calls himself a CEO, right? It's like, okay,
right,
I started
yeah.
a company, I'm the CEO. Well, actually, that's actually
I'm the
a
CEO.
Thing. Right, that's a corporate structure thing. You need to have, like,
yes.
That actual title, and I didn't realize that. Maybe we may have talked about this before on the show.
I am officially the director of my company.
Right, because, yeah, there's different titles yeah. and different corporate structures across the world, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah, so
director
legally
Jones.
I have to be the director. I'm
right.
Director Jones. You know?
Right, right. But you don't have to put that on your LinkedIn profile, right? I guess
no,
that's like the real
exactly.
test these days, you know?
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I was looking at the Voltset thing, and I was talking to the guy last night, and I obviously he wasn't the technical person, so... But he didn't. So we were talking about. I asked how many digits it was, right? It's a DMM,
yeah.
right?
And, of course, yeah.
And they don't actually spec it like that. And I was kind of curious about that. I mean, they talk about accuracy.
Yeah, because it's a data logger. People do these things as data loggers and then call it a multimeter, or they call it an oscilloscope. Where really, it's just a, you know, it's they've just got a 16-bit ADC in there, and it's just a data logger, and they don't really. Treat it as a multimeter as such. So yeah
and they
Meh.
They're doing 0.05% and it's like okay, I mean, I don't know,
yeah,
I feel like 0.1% these days is kind of this thing. I know that's across temperature and everything else as well, but
yeah,
you know, so it seems okay. I don't know, I don't think I'd get it myself, but I don't even know what the lowest level is. The lowest level looks like it's $80 if you backed it right away. So
yeah, it's probably okay for what it is. It's like all those things, you know. They're not. It's not designed as a multimeter replacement. You know, if you think it is, you're just crazy.
Right.
It's not. It's a, you know, it's a multimeter attachment for your tablet. It's not a replacement for a proper multimeter. It's
yeah.
You know, it is what it is, and it tries to do multiple things. You know, it's not just a multimeter. I'm sure it does data
right. Well, yeah, you kind of have to have
else,
that,
right?
Right? I mean, so for contextual electronics, we've been using the EX330 based on actually your recommendation, the $50 multimeter shootout.
Yeah,
and there's some weird stuff with it, but I mean, like for $50, it's, you know, it does a lot of stuff. It has a lot of features, and it is
it's
a good.
It's nice and rugged, and it's tiny.
Yeah,
and, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's yeah, and I like it so far. I mean, but yeah, so that's your baseline then, right? And then it has a little display on it, so you have to add all the fancy schmancy, the graphical stuff on top of it, or else why not just
to make
get
it
that,
worthwhile
right?
hook it up to your phone? Otherwise, what's the point? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, yeah, I don't personally know what the benefit of a phone connected thing is. I mean, I guess same with the Mushi meter as well. So I've talked to Eric about this as well. You know, it's like, I guess the data logging stuff and Mushi does two channel and stuff like that. But
well,
I don't know.
It's great when you need that hands free, you know, wireless remote kind of thing, just like the Fluke 233, you know, with its removable display.
The
you
attachable.
Know, it's the same thing. But for everyday use, no, it's useless, right?
Right,
it's just
yeah.
more trouble than it's worth. But when, but it's invaluable
it.
For those
right.
times. Yeah.
Right.
But it's invaluable
right.
for those times when you need that hands-free.
Right. And the hands-free is kind of like, so, and that actually is a good situation for a data log, like you said, you know
yeah,
you're hooking it up, you're walking away, and you want to come back and see what kind of data it's crapped out versus, you know, I'm touching these two things. What is the voltage between these two probes or across these two probes?
Right.
You know?
Right. Most of the time, I don't have to do data logging. I rarely do data logging. But when you do, you've got to have a tool that does the job, right? So it's one
right,
of those.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's usually clunky to do it with the smaller, you know, display based stuff, right? Unless you have some kind of weird export or, you know, SD card craziness. So
right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
see, to me, a lot of the time that would be fine. Like I don't need a wireless display type thing. I can just use my regular multimeter that has data logging in. I just set the logging mode. I put it there, and I come back and I upload the data, and you know, everything's hunky dory. I don't have to view it in real time. you know, on a display and on my phone, all that sort of jazz. But I can appreciate how some people might. Anyway, shall we talk about your portable lab? You took it with you. You got it finished. How'd it go?
I did. It's good. I have video of the build. I haven't uploaded the video yet, though.
Cool.
So I ended up changing the format. Before, it was kind of like opening like a book. So like the it's a case. It's about 2 feet, 2 feet by a foot and a half, or
it's a pretty big ass case.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's pretty sizable. It's pretty deep actually as well. And actually, so I had taken it home last week. Did we talk about it last week? I don't think we did.
No.
With Mike? Was that last week? Yeah, that was last week.
I don't think we talked
about it much. But anyways, I had taken it home last weekend to try it, just kind of to take it with me somewhere and see how it goes and everything. And basically the way I had the foam cut out and everything, I had it so that when you open the case, it kind of sat like an open book on the surface. And then you could pull out the tools and use them and everything. And then based on, I think, your suggestion, and then a couple of people on Twitter as well, I had complained about, work surface. I don't have a static mat, or anti-static mat, rather. And so I started thinking about it, and someone suggested, well, why don't you mount something in there? And so I did that. So I went out and I got a scroll saw, and I got some plywood. And basically I screwed in a piece of plywood cut to shape in the lid.
You screwed it into the plastic.
Yeah, there's actually standoffs in there.
There's standoffs, is there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now the thing
nice.
I found, though, is that so this plastic is actually really – the reason it's so good at being rugged is actually not because it's hard. It's actually because it's soft. It actually
absorbs
it.
It's a polymer. It's a polymer plastic,
exactly.
Yes.
It's
impact-resistant
like
polymer.
Yeah, it's like they got different foam cells and stuff like that. And so what happened was I got these screws that I was using. And at first, I'm like, wow, I just got this a lot. You know, I drilled through the board, this board I cut out, and I marked it, and I thought I got everything right.
Yep.
And I screwed through it, right, through these pre-drilled holes. And I'm like, wow, this is holding in great. Well, it turns out that this screw I was using was actually self-tapping, and it just went right through the actual boss. I was off by a little bit. And so that was actually a really big problem. I started screwing into the actual plastic versus in the holes that were in the boss, right? Or the riser thingy. So I finally got the alignment right, but once it's in there, I mean, it's in there. And then basically I had gotten a anti-static mat, some Amazon Rosewill mat, and I just cut that to size, and then I cut and then I screwed that into the wood then. And then the idea eventually would be that I could mount actual power supplies and stuff to the mat, to the wood, and through the mat, basically. So like the bench body.
Okay, right.
Bench body's meant to be that kind of thing, so it actually has screw holes and everything. I could screw that directly down. And then possibly even getting what I'm really thinking about doing next is doing like a 5-volt boost, like 5 to 30.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have plus and minus 30, and I could maybe do another power supply like that.
Using the space under the wood, because there's standoffs there, right? So you've got a space under there.
Yeah.
You're talking about?
I was actually thinking above the wood. There's actually still a lip.
Okay. Right.
So if you think about the case actually has a lip of about probably,
of course, yeah.
Probably about 4 or 5 inches or
It's deep, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty deep. And so the stand with the wood and the standoff, there's another probably 2 to 3 inches yet. It takes about half of it. And so I could probably get something mounted to that, you know, a low-profile board, you know, thinking about just like a boost converter or something like that. Probably not a boost, but actually like a push-pull through a transformer actually to push different voltages, you know, so I can get plus-minus rails, and then, you know, I can control the edges so I can get a cleaner power supply, because that's usually a big deal there. But the thing is, like, I'm using the ATX power supply, like the actual connector right now, and the I wanted it for the plus-minus 12 volts. That's the real reason I used it in the first place. But that's actually only 1 or 2 amps per rail. It's not actually much.
Only. Still pretty good, dude. That's 12 watts.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. But I use that already for the bench buddy, right? I can just use the linear regulator and get that down pretty easy. What I really want to do is go the other direction, right? So the supply itself, I mean, this is a 550-watt off-the-shelf ATX power supply. It costs $20. And it's surprisingly quiet. I mean, like, it's Like, I've measured it, loaded, unloaded. I mean, like, each, like, I can, and then I've been hearing from all the course members as well. Like, they're like, oh, I got this 20-year-old supply, and it's super noisy. And I'm like, you know, it's just basically all of these low-cost companies are taking advantage of better switching technology for offline switchers, yep. And now I get this benefit as well. And the idea would be, though, you know, use the 12, plus or minus 12 just into the bench buddy, but then take a 5-amp or 5-volt, which has like 20 or 30 amps behind it, like something, some serious friggin' current behind it, and then taking that and boosting that up and, you know, taking a boost maybe or push-pull probably so I can get another bipolar rail and then have some serious current as well. And then the current would be limited by how much the transformer would be able to do. You know, get a low-profile transformer and plug all that stuff in. And then you have a setup where it's like, you know, $100, you have a couple of different rails, you have, you know, the bench buddy, and, you know, it would be
sure.
So yeah, it's I'm dreaming like crazy.
Sounds
but,
good.
Yeah, of course the bench buddy's not finished yet, but
right.
Yeah,
and it made it there without a gun,
right? Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, so I actually ended up getting TSA approved locks, which seemed kind of stupid.
They are stupid. Yep.
Yeah, so basically like these little cable locks from Master Lock. And then they have like a master key on the bottom, like a skeleton key, effectively, that the TSA has. And then they can unlock it and look in there if they need to. But what I did is I actually followed Steve Hofer's advice. And I put a note in there and I said, hello, TSA. Here's all the things you'll find in here. And, you know, yada, yada, yada. It sounds stupid. I felt really stupid writing it, but it's just... Jesus. Thanks, San Francisco. You are so noisy.
Somebody just got shot and murdered with
exactly, apparently. Yeah, some
street.
Hipster got shot for not having the right iPhone.
Right.
but what I did is, so yeah, I put that note in there, and basically what happened, though, is I saw the thing go through. They put it through a scanner actually outside, so I could actually see it go through, and it got through fine, and... I don't know.
So
I don't,
they didn't open it up or anything? At least at that point, they didn't bother.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know. Apparently, they sometimes zip tie it when they do open it up.
Okay.
But
yep.
Honestly, I mean, so I know this sounds bad, but like
well,
the locks
you would know,
are there for
because they have to put a note inside, don't they?
They do. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the locks are there not for the TSA because they're actually not allowed to be there. They'll clip a lock off, basically. Honestly, the locks are there for the baggage handlers. That sounds kind of stupid, but that's the only other place that it would be, right? I mean, TSA obviously could steal stuff still, or they could mess with stuff, or they could break stuff. But with these kind of locks, they can do that anyways.
But you think they're a bit, they're probably a bit higher paid and they don't need to. Is that what you're getting at?
No, I don't know. I mean, I was talking to people on Twitter about it too, and they said, well, it basically could be anyone that could do this, right? It very much could be the TSA that breaks stuff or steals stuff. But at least in the Cleveland Airport,
that reminds
me
of the Chappelle Corby case, but I shouldn't get into that because that's very Australian specific.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Trust me.
So, anyways, so yeah, no, that's good. We can talk after the show about that. It's at least so this first time. I mean, honestly, it's going to be a numbers game, right? If I ship this thing 100 times, it's very likely that one or two times, I'm going to have a very bad experience. And even that thing we linked a bunch a couple episodes ago when we were talking about this stuff with the guy packing a gun.
Maybe you won't. Maybe you're just assuming. That you will, and based on, you know, just hype and myth that there's, you know, rampant theft, you know, 5% of luggage gets broken into or something like that. That's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I don't know.
Show me the data.
Right. Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, people that are stolen from are likely to write about it and talk about it.
Exactly. So you only hear the bad cases. You don't hear the millions of good ones.
Right.
Yeah.
Or probably mediocre ones. Let's be honest, Dave.
Okay. Well, yeah. I had a wonderful experience with my baggage handle, and I rate him 5 stars.
Dave, let me tell you, I love the TSA. They treated me when they stuck their hand on my pants the other day. It was so gentle. No, I'm just saying.
Did you get one of these pat down? Have you ever had one of these TSA pat downs?
No, but who did I fly? I flew with someone that they did the I think it might have been Lane, actually, 2 years ago. I think it was Lane, actually. He said he didn't want to go through the scanner, and he just said, I would like to be, you know, whatever,
pat
and they
down,
gave him a pat down. And it was fine. I mean, yeah, you're right. You do hear about the bad stuff only, but I think, you know, statistically, if you go long enough, if you fly enough flights, you're going to have a bad experience, right? But that's true about anything.
You're going to have lost luggage. You're going to have something.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, fly enough flights, you're going to be in a plane crash, right? I mean, let's be honest about it. Like, you know,
or you're going to meet some grumpy TSA official, and then
right,
you write
exactly.
about it, and then that becomes the norm, right?
Right, you know. But at the same time, I think it's still good to have, you know, some kind of way against it. Anyway, so the locks seem like, it seems like a good solution for now. We'll see. I mean, if I get 100 flights and on the 99, on the 100th flight, someone opens up my stuff and breaks my scope and everything else, the stuff that's in there, in terms of the value I get from having my lab with me, of those 99 before it, it probably is worth it. And that's the reason I'm using low-cost stuff,
too. It's already written off, exactly.
Yeah, and if I was sending my MDO-3000 with me, I would probably get an insurance policy and everything else, and... Uh-huh. But no, I am not sending that with me.
Have you got your MDO-3000?
I got it the day or two. I got it 2 days before I left, and I didn't have time to play with it much.
I didn't have time to even unpack it.
I opened it. I sniffed it. I did the...
You sniffed it and twirled some knobs. And yeah. Yep. Did you get the 1 gig version?
I did. Oh, my God, dude.
Yeah, they're giving those away like candy.
So, backstory for people.
Another advantage of being a blogger.
I think so, yeah. So I got an email from Tektronix, and a very nice person there, Amy. Basically, they said, you know, we want to get our stuff out there. And I'm like, yeah. I told them, I said, you know, I can't use this for contextual electronics. I want to use low-cost stuff. And I've actually been really happy with the low-cost stuff that we've been using, you know, across the whole spectrum.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, they still said they wanted to send it to me. I said, that's very generous. Of course, I'll accept that. And it is... I mean, it's beautiful, right? We've talked about it on the show. You've tried one out. I've tried one out.
It's a beautiful scope. Yeah.
And, you know, it's how could I turn that down? Honestly, that's the best scope I've ever had, but that's a pretty low bar for me, at least. I mean, I think the Rigel was the best scope I had before that. Because analog guys don't need much, you know?
Most people don't need much.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. And what I would need is something like what is it LaCroix has, like a 12-bit scope versus an 8-bit, you know, like that kind of stuff. Like, I don't need I need resolution. I don't need super high speed. If there's super high speed noise, you know, if I'm using a SAR ADC or not a SAR, sorry, Sigma Delta ADC in the first place, I'm integrating all that noise out in the first place, right? you know, like it's just like, it's not that it's not relevant, because it is relevant, but it's just like sometimes you just don't want to know. So
exactly.
So now I'm going to be super paranoid if I could see like high frequency signals coming through.
Well, then don't get the Agilent then, because I've done videos on that and why the Agilent is noisier, because it's faster. It shows up the noise, and some people don't like that. And,
I know.
Well, okay, rightly so.
Right. So, I used to work at Keith Lee, right? And because they're Cleveland company, they actually – I remember this specifically. I remember the first time I walked into the lab at my college, because we were in Cleveland, they donated a bunch of Keith Lee DMMs, right? And I remember trying it out. I had never used a Keith Lee before that, obviously, because I couldn't afford it. And trying it out, and then they actually had an HP 34100 or something like that. I don't remember the low-end 6.5-digit HP scope from back in the day.
Yep. 34410A.
Yeah, that's it. Yep, exactly. And so we had them side-by-side, and people chose the HP every time. And it was because it updated slower. It's so stupid, right? I mean, like,
right, okay.
it doesn't actually mean it. That's not realistic, right? I mean, people chose it every time because it had these nice, you know, blocky
warm, fuzzy,
looking letters, and it was a slower signal, quote in quote marks, right?
Yeah,
it's so dumb, but like, it's just this stupid human nature type thing, you know?
Exactly. I know. It's oh goodness.
So yeah,
I don't know. Classic.
So yes, I would not bring an MDO-3. I don't think I'd ever bring that with me on the road,
crazy.
Right? I mean, like that's
see,
a
I get scope. Complaints about this, like, oh, why do you use all this high end gear? Well, it's because I have it. You know, they say you're setting a bad example because
Dave, why do you climb that mountain? because it's there.
So I'm supposed to struggle, you know, apparently I'm supposed to, you know, solder together things with a plumber's iron and, you know.
Right. Well, no, honestly, that's a trade-off I had to make for the course. I did that.
Of course. Yeah.
I went lower because I wanted to show that there is stuff out there, right? I mean,
I would do the same thing if I was doing such a course and I was promoting it to beginners.
Yeah. You know, so I used the EX330, like you talk about in your video. Yeah. I used the AOUE 937, which is I think the one that got knocked off by that super low-end one that you reviewed, right?
The $16 one, yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, they all look the same, but they're all... I think the AOUE is actually a knockoff of something. Is the Hakko? Or I don't know, because the Hakko's blue. There's maybe the
Anyway, they're all a ripoff of something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I use the Gabotronics X Mini Lab, right, which is a little 200 kilohertz breadboard base.
Oscilloscope-y plug-in.
Scope-y. I don't really call it a scope. It's got a little logic analyzer. It's got an AWG. Right. It's got a protocol. I mean, like, it's great. I love it, actually. I mean, like, it's a great little tool. I mean, it really is. It's... And the same kind of thing. If I was using the Bus Pirate instead, right, the Dangerous Prototypes Bus Pirate,
right?
You know, they're constrained in what they can do, but oftentimes it covers 80% of the people that are going to use it in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Those 80% shouldn't probably buy the MDO-3000, right? They're going to buy it when they need it, right? That's how I operate. That's how a lot of people operate. You know, when you need it, you really need it, and that's when that you know many thousands of dollar price tag makes a lot of sense. You know, it's just okay, I need it because I'm using something leading edge and I'm going to go.
But then again, the test equipment revolution in the last 6-7 years has meant you can get a lot of bang for your buck. You know, you can buy a $500 scope and wow, you know, the shit it can do is phenomenal.
That's true. But I think, yeah. I think the, you know, I've thought about this before as well. I think about the assumption was that, you know, the march of technology would mean that the higher and higher frequency would be necessary for the masses, right? But in general, the masses are still, you know, sub 100 megahertz. You know, that's one of the problems. That's what a lot of test equipment manufacturers are dealing with, is that what most people need, you know, as this base broadens, you know, there's more people that need simpler stuff. But there is still a large crowd that needs the fancy stuff, and so they move up into the fancy area, right? So Keithy Wise 6.5, 7.5, 8.5 digit of DMMs. There are people that need that, but there's a lot more people that need a 3.5, right? And so they.
I'll tell you why.
Go ahead.
I'll tell you why. Because.
Because you can't get a 9.5 digit DMM.
It's because. The reason people don't need that for the high-end stuff is because the high-end stuff is generally you buy a chip off the shelf and it works, right? How many times, right, if you're implementing a HDMI interface or a USB 3.0, how many times are you actually going to have to probe that USB 3 signal? You won't, right? Because you're buying off the shelf chip, you follow the design
rules, laying out
the traces to the connector.
That's a bad example, given Mike being on the show last week. He said that stuff's all buggy. But
right, well, you know.
Let's go with HDMI, though. Yeah, I'll go for HDMI.
Right, okay, no, let's just go USB 2 or HD, right?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, go for something that's a mature technology,
HDMI, or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Right, you buy a chip off the shelf and it works, all that stuff's hidden from you, because the fact of the matter is that to truly debug that stuff properly and measure it and quantify it, the march of technology doesn't get any better. You still need a 2 gig differential probe, right? You still need like a Fed input probe, right? You know, like that stuff is niche and is always going to be expensive. It's not going to become mainstream.
Right. I agree.
Right. So, and most of the time you're going to be dealing with, does the switch in power supply work? You know,
to
the chip, right? Because the chip's already debugged. Somebody at the higher level's taken care of that. And standard system electronics engineering. You're just bolting together stuff, so you only need to do the day-to-day stuff. Is there a signal there? Yes, no. Does the power supply work? Yes, no. Okay, everything else is bloody software.
Yep. Yeah, that's a really good point.
You know, it's like, That's why these high-end tools have not become mainstream.
Right, much to their chagrin. But I think that the feet, you know, they also benefit from the stuff that gets added onto it, right? They get to add like the fancy software around it, and that kind of benefits stuff as well. So it's a trade off, right? I mean, you get some of the fanciness in order to, but you lose some of the market that needs the fanciness, right? that's kind of the struggle. So I did see, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about, I'm going to say it anyways. I did see I saw a tablet-based wireless scope.
A tablet-based wireless scope. Oh, this is so, the company, what's their name? And they're a Chinese company, right?
No. Should compare notes here. So I saw someone else. This is a German company. They're a big kit maker. I'm still not sure if I'm supposed to say it. It was Velamon, the kit maker.
Right.
They have a, it's coming out soon. It's a, I'm guessing it must be Bluetooth or something. But basically it talks to a scope or talks to a tablet and it's all wireless. The scope is obviously isolated because it's battery based. It can do 10 megahertz per channel and it'll talk to the scope. I mean, like, I think the isolation is an interesting thing, right? I mean, you kind of remove the galvanic isolation requirements because you're going.
Yeah, but does it have like real knobs on it, and does the tablet sort of slot into it? In which case, it's not a real scope, as we, you know, a proper bench scope.
Right.
It's a box. It just becomes a wireless instead of it becomes like another PC-based scope.
It is
wireless instead of using USB.
Yeah,
too.
That's a closer approximation. So yeah, it's a.
It's another PC.
It's a USB scope without the USB, right? With wireless USB.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's still cool, though, right? I mean, it's still cool.
If you want something like that, sure.
Well, I think there are people. I mean, again, like with the data logger type of thing,
of course there's people. There's a market for everything.
Yeah. Well, there was so you think about, I mean, honestly, you think about like an isolated situation where you need to go further than even galvanic would. Like, you know, you could do this with like a transformer, right? You can isolate stuff, you know, to hundreds, thousands of volts, even with transformers. But, you know, you need to do, so say you're, obviously the Arc-Attack is here, right? They're doing like the super fancy Tesla coils type of stuff, you know, 10,000 volts and more. If you need to do that kind of stuff, but your scope is going to float up on top of that, then yeah, you can do that, right? You can float everything up around there. So that becomes worthwhile at that point, right? It's a 10 megahertz scope. It might be on top of 100 megahertz or,
well, of course you need the right tool for the job. There's countless handheld scopes on the market that'll do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But it's probably not the best. I always maintain it's not the best choice for an everyday use scope. There is something to be said for just plugging it in, pressing the power button, and it works, and there's knobs there, and the screen's built in. You don't have to worry about, oh, where's my tablet? Because you end up using your bloody tablet for something else. It's sitting somewhere else. Yeah. Oh, I left it at home. I left it in my bag. Where is it? Oh, it's not charged. Oh, like, you know, come on. Yeah. Right? It's... Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It's not for everyday use.
No, sorry. And I think the assumption is that it's always going to be pretty niche in order to, you know, it's these corner cases of what people need, but I think it's still interesting, right? I mean, because that's going to push the whole thing forward. Honestly, what it's going to probably do is going to push the big boys to kind of integrate that stuff, and then they'll have a tablet in the front that they can pull out, and you know, and then you're wrong because I'm right. So that's what I liked about it.
That's
right. That was a big setup. Let's see. Other things that I was interested in. So the same kind of field of things, not really, in terms of the isolation. There was a guy there that had, you know, like those little like Bobcat front loader thingies, you know, it can like scoop up dirt and stuff like that.
Yep.
This guy had an electric one that was completely remote controlled. So you think about like the Fukushima disaster and needing to be able to clean up like a radiation, like totally closed system, totally battery powered. And he was controlling with a remote control. Holy crap. It was like a Tonka truck on crack.
nice.
It was so awesome. I had to hold myself back to ask him if I could drive. It was so cool, though.
Oh, dear.
And a lot of the... I finally met the Other Mill people. You know Other Mill? I think we've talked about it on here before.
Oh, have we?
It's like it looks kind of like it's kind of about the size of like a cupcake, the old 3D printers, or so.
Right.
It does. It's a it. they say it's a CNC mill, but really the main thing that I would see it for is kind of a board router, and that's obviously one of the things they kind of use it as like a board router and like jewelry. Right. But then they, so the thing that's interesting is that they have really fancy software to go straight from Eagle to board routing. So five by five by two, and kind of just getting that software experience where it's not the shitty CAM process that, you know, once you, you know, if you actually go use an old school, you know, if you're routing a copper clad board in order to get like a circuit, that was, have you done that before?
In what way?
So you take copper clad and then there's a little engraving bit and you kind of cut away it so that you get the isolation channels. And you ever done that before?
Oh, I've sort of done a few, by hand. I've scraped it. I've scraped ones out by hand.
Okay, yeah. So this would be
I've been a human CNC.
Yeah. So this would be like that.
RF stuff.
And, okay, you know. Right. So this is, I've used a CNC in the past. It's like a router table, effectively. You know, it's the Z height on the drill, on the milling bit actually doesn't have much. It doesn't actually raise up much, maybe like 1 or 2 inches. Yeah. But basically, it's great for these large planar things. You know, it can do, you know, a wide area, so for cutting circuit boards and stuff like that. And it's all copper clad. Right. This is how the LPKFs work. You've seen those before?
The LPKFs, yes, I've used those.
And so basically, this is kind of like that, but a lower cost. LPKFs very, very fancy and expensive. Like $10,000 or so, or something like that.
Oh yeah, plus that's the base model, I think.
Yeah. But these guys, so they were a Kickstarter and they work out around here. But they have this. Honestly, it's about the software, right? Again, it's about the software where they go straight. They target Eagle. They go straight from Eagle, and basically it's a one click import, and they start cutting a PCB. And for the amount of people that are using Eagle, that actually is really, really powerful, right? You know, you have to you just go straight to it.
Is it only Eagle? Because I'd be very disappointed if it's only Eagle.
I think they started with Eagle. I doubt it's only Eagle for long term, though. You know, it's you capture the main part of the market you're targeting. Yeah, right? Yeah. They're kind of going for the hobbyist one, so that starts to make sense. And they can do jewelry, and they can do everything. You know, they can do the lower end CNCs, like the non professional ones, the hobbyist and prosumer ones. They can do aluminum. They can do light aluminum. Yep. They can do brass. They can do. They can do PCBs, they can do wood, that kind of stuff. So,
and what's the name of this thing again?
That's the Other Mill.
Other Mill.
Yeah. The one that I was really excited about, though, was the Carbide. So the company's Carbide 3D. The actual mill is called the Nomad. This is one, if you're going to get this, so this is a desktop one. Dave, actually, because you were actually thinking about getting this is one you should do. So I'm really excited about this. I've used the software before. The guy that wrote MeshCam, which is like this badass CAM software. So if people don't know CAD, CAD is like SolidWorks or SketchUp or anything else, anything that spits out like an STL or similar type of a file. Then you have to push that into a CAM file or CAM program. And basically that takes this design file, right? You have like the shape of like a book, right? You're trying to replicate a book in wood, right? So you have your design file in CAD. And you push that to CAM, and the CAM basically tells the machine, you know, which direction to move the tool in order to cut, right? And there's similar kind of things for 3D printers. And so MeshCam is a CAM software that's actually really nice. I mean, I've used it before, and I've used it for my mill. And the guy that wrote it is part of this project. So it's, like, super tightly integrated, and they have, like, just ton of really nice. It's a little pricier. It's like, I think it's like $3,500, but it does like eight inches by 8 inches by 3 inches, and it can do some pretty fancy stuff. And they have like, so part of the stuff in the software, they can actually do two-sided stuff. So you can do machine on one side, flip it over, machine on the other side, and it's all aligned. And it's killer. So I'm really, really, that was probably one of my favorite. I mean, obviously I'm into machining, but that was one of my favorite things at Maker Fair, besides the Tonka truck thing.
And besides the big Tonka truck.
Yeah. So, so if you're really thinking about the CAD stuff.
Well, I'm thinking about small tools for here, because I'm staying in my existing 50 square meter lab here. And
no, I know, but this would be
little tools.
This would be like the size, you know, like the area you have where you have your your microscope and everything, it kind of swings over, and that's like probably like a meter square, right? It's probably about a meter square.
Yeah, yeah.
That's about how much room it would take.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, that's a lot of room.
No, it's not. Come on, you got a ton of room. I mean, you could put it on the end of a bench. That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, I've only got so much bench space.
Right, but then you'd have instant boards. I mean, that's freaking awesome. I don't know. Obviously, it's a toy.
Send me the link. Send me the link.
Yeah, I will. It's yeah. So
right, I don't know. I'm looking at this other mill thing, and it looks quite sexy.
Yeah. Oh no, that one's nice too. I just like it from the. I think, like, if I was going to, like, put them on a spectrum, like, other mills kind of, like more towards if I was just doing PCBs and I was definitely an eagle, I would go with other mill. I think it's a little pricier than I thought it would be.
It supports Gerber as well.
Oh, it does. Okay, so that's what I was.
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's right, because they said BRD or Gerber. You're right about that. But then if I wanted to go into the actual machining stuff and getting, like, both, you know, kind of getting more of it, I would probably, and I wanted to do stuff like a little bit bigger, I would probably, and plus, yeah. The other thing that I don't think the other mill does, and I know that this is kind of esoteric for people that haven't done machining before, but like, one of the hard things about machining is knowing where your drill bit or your end mill stops, where it starts and stops, where the end of it is, mm-hmm. And so it's called indexing, right? And
yep.
The Nomad has that built in, and it's just... It's right. Awesome. I mean, like, it's just, you know, it's built by machinists, right? I mean, that's kind of, or, you know, hobbyist machinists, really. But it's, so basically it's what I would have gotten if I didn't get my take. So it's okay. All doable. It's all the same kind of stuff, but it's just what you want to do with it. So.
Yep.
Oh, so much stuff to see.
Exactly.
Oh, so what, hey, I haven't asked you yet. We're about 55 minutes in. What the hell have you been up to, man?
What the hell have I been up to? Everything but producing videos. I'm slowly working my way to, well, I'm not far off having my new live show set up.
Ooh, yeah?
Yes.
So what does that entail?
Because, yeah, I'm going to be, because, like, you know, rather than just have one crappy webcam and then just, you know, do it, I've got, right, two top-quality Canon camcorders, right, and they've got HDMI outputs. And I've also got that Tagano microscope, which is HDMI output, right? So these are all full HD. Mm-hmm, and so I figure, yeah. Well, I've got this new internet bandwidth, right? Why don't I capture this HDMI from these cameras and from my microscope?
I was going to say that you sound very, very high bandwidth today. I don't know if people could hear it, but you sound super high bandwidth.
Right, high bandwidth. And boy, yeah. Anyway, and I figured I would ditch Ustream, right, and I'd go for YouTube Live, right. So I did a test yesterday.
Okay.
And I used YouTube Live using Wirecast, which is software, which is free if you use it with YouTube, right? And it's like a video production switching software.
Okay.
So I can plug in all these HDMI captured cameras, including my microscope, into this software, and I can automatically produce live shows in real time and record them locally as well as stream them to YouTube Live all in full
awesome.
HD.
That's great, man.
I know.
So and basically like, what Dave's so, saying here is he's going to start a television station all Dave, all the time, 24/7, beamed across the planet, yep. Unless he's sleeping or shopping eBay.
That's the plan is that, yeah, my cameras will be all permanently set up. They'll be all permanently wired into a, well, except for my main camera, which I'll still use for shooting my regular videos.
Right.
It'll be sort of
more
free
flexible.
To roam.
Yep.
But, yeah, I'll have my secondary B camera, which is almost as good, permanently wired up into all that. My microscope will be permanently wired in, and I'll be able to just go bang. I want to produce a live show. You know, I get something in. I get a new box in, something from eBay or something. I can do a live unboxing of it with no setup at all. I can just switch on, bang, go right. Live, right. Full HD.
Yep.
And the advantage of YouTube Live is that my audience, you know, I've got like 130,000 subscribers, they automatically get notified in my subscription, in their subscription feed, that I'm going live. Like, fancy. I did a test yesterday, right? And I just wanted to test the software, so I didn't tell anyone. I didn't want to interact with anyone. I just wanted to test how the system works.
He's still a nerd, folks. Minutes, I didn't want to talk to anyone.
And within 5 minutes of pressing the live button, I had 150 people show up.
Jeez, you know, man.
Because it automatically got announced on my feed.
Yeah, yeah.
And there I was. And then I ended up doing a live impromptu one-hour live show.
Yeah, right. He's doing a little dance. He's got a top hat.
As always, there's horrible lag with these systems. Like, it ranged anywhere from 10 seconds to a minute.
Wow.
You know, lag. It was pretty awful. But people were viewing this thing. You know, in full, well, it was only 1280 by 720. It wasn't full HD yet, but I can certainly do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll stream in my desktop as well, and I'll switch in between them. And
well, it's fancy, man.
I know. It's good. So I just need to get a
It's like the Truman Show, but for Dave. Items and, you just need to start installing cameras right. in your house and your car and everything else.
Yeah,
here.
Right. Anyway, I will have a 24/7 cam set up in the corner of the lab, and that'll be streaming video.
That's
all
right,
the time,
folks. Any time of day, you can watch Dave scratching his ass.
That's it. So, yeah. So I'm sticking with where my audience base is, which is on YouTube. And, well, you know, YouTube Live may have its faults, but hey, it's there. You know,
yeah,
that's
no,
where my
that's,
audience
that's really
is.
Smart.
So,
and you know what? It'll make you more of a cultural icon, including. did you see Ben's Ben Heck?
I did.
He did.
I sent him the audio files that which came from the which I didn't do actually. So credit for the audio captures goes to somebody on Jerry's old live show,
right?
You know,
on the forum, that was the Fat Man Circuit.
Yeah,
girl, right?
So. Yeah, somebody captured all that. So all those audio quotes come from, like, my first 30 videos or something, you know. So,
yep. Yeah, so anyway, basically, the cow says, that was basically those old toys where the you pull a lever and the thing spins around and it goes to Dave saying, instead of the cow says, it's, you know, some kind of...
You're a dickhead.
Yeah.
Crikey! Look at that.
Yeah, and I got to see it. So I saw Ben last night. I met him once before, yep. But I got to see it live. It was
excellent.
Good times.
He's going to send me that, so I can
give it
away to one of my viewers. I don't know who would want it, but yeah, apparently.
Be surprised, I'm sure.
He's going to send it to me.
Yeah.
So,
did you see my new T-shirt design last night?
Yes, I did. Yes, very good.
What did you think? You like it?
Yeah, I like it. But you're not going to sell it?
I am going to sell it because I gave...
Oh, you are.
So when Bunny cut his hair off, I gave the shirt to Sean, or Zobs, the guy that does a lot of the Linux programming stuff.
Right.
I gave it to Sean, and so I no longer have it. So I need my own T-shirt now. So I am going to... I'll put it up on Teespring. I'll keep it low cost, and...
cool.
I need to find the files, but I'll post it on the Ampower when we do that. The shirt is basically it says never largely in trust the auto router, and then it's a picture of a very poorly auto routed circuit.
Yep.
That it's actually the Bench Buddy, my circuit from Contextual Electronics.
All right.
A little bit messed up.
I had a similar shirt design I uploaded, but I never got it done, and it was supposed to be, because it was too many colors, it was like it was going to be like an auto router type, t-shirt. So yep, I'll send you the link after the the show. I'll show you that. But yeah, it was too fancy, basically. It had too many colors, it was an 8-layer board, and it looked like sort of, it was like blurred around the outside, so it looked like you had circuitry inside you. You know,
really?
So it was
cool.
You're looking inside you, and there's a board inside you. You know,
that's great.
That
man.
Was the idea of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, cool.
But they said, "Oh, we can't make that. It's got too many colors." You know.
Mm.
Gee, thanks.
Yeah, that is the downside of shirts and anything printed like that. Mm. They usually start getting grumpy when you do anything crazy.
Exactly.
So yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it for today's show, because we both need to bugger off, and it's been an hour. So,
yeah. Is there anything else we...
Why not keep it to an hour today?
An hour? This is so weird, Dave. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I know. Go figure. Anyway, so but what? So you spent one day at Maker Fair. It's a two-day event.
2 days at Maker Fair. Yeah, right. I was there Saturday, Sunday. I was there. Well, the Friday night is like the pre thing because I give a talk as well.
Right. Yeah.
So I was there Friday night, and then Saturday, Sunday, the crowds were all there, and then today I got up here, and now I'm in San Francisco for a week. So
cool. One of my favorite cities, San Fran. Love it.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a little pricey.
And
a little pricey.
What exactly are you doing there for a week? Yeah, it's expensive.
Well, I'll be working in my tiny hotel room on Context Electronics. I have my lab with me, obviously. And then I'll be at SolidCon Wednesday and Thursday giving a talk.
Oh, okay. So you've got to kill time, basically. You're just killing time between
SolidCon. Yeah, I'm doing some other work around here, too. So, yeah. But mostly, you know, right. Electronics and meeting people and conference, so, and then flying home.
Because that's your gig these days with
it's weird.
Supply Frame, pretty much. It's just hobnobbing around the place.
Yeah.
Well, talking to people,
well,
isn't it?
I'll talk more about that when I can talk more about that. But yeah, it's been good. A lot of meeting interesting folks, so that's good. You know, it's funny, I took an Uber today, right? So I took an Uber, like the car ride, you know what that is?
No.
So it's like basically it's like an app on your phone, and basically it calls a car that's like a cab effectively. Like it tells it, you use the GPS on your phone and the car shows up and basically, you know, it picks you up and then.
Car or a cab?
It's a car. It's not a taxi cab. It's not Medallion like a lot of the cities are. They tie in with the New York cabs, but they don't do that in a lot of other cities. But basically it's so it's like people, right? It's people. You don't have to be a, you know, professional cab driver. You don't have to go through any kind of weird training or anything like that.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. There was talk about that here and all the cab drivers got up in arms.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of strife about that. But the idea is that basically anyone can do it, especially Uber X, which is the cheaper version. It's not like a fancy black car. So it was just, I rode in a Camry today, right? Like Toyota Camry, standard car.
So some stranger comes and picks you up and what, you pay them $10 or something? How does it work?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so, and it's all credit card based on the back end, so that kind of stuff. But
So there's no cash.
There was no cash involved. The tip's already included. I mean, it's great.
Right. So you just put into your app that I'm now here because it knows where you are with GPS. I want to go here.
Yep.
And somebody goes, well, I'm on the way. And
yep,
is
exactly
that how it
exactly
works?
Yep.
Right.
And so the guy I was talking to today, though, he's like, yeah, you know, I got laid off. I was in IT for 13 years. I started doing this, and I love it. And I was talking about it, and I told him what I do, and I'm like...
Okay, so he's doing it full-time.
Yeah, and I told him, like, I'm teaching a course online, and I'm like, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, 5 years ago, neither of us would have been able to do what we're doing right now, right? I mean, like,
same here.
Exactly, like, exactly. You know. So, you know, and that's more and more.
People don't understand, YouTube is what... 8, 9 years old?
8 years old. It
like
was 2006.
It had its eighth birthday or something. Yep. Like, it's not that old.
That's crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
How do you, can people remember a world without YouTube, let alone a world without internet?
Right. Or even the early days of YouTube when it wasn't, it was literally cat videos, you know, nothing else.
And they're all 320 by 200 and that was HD.
I encourage you to go back and look at your early videos there, buddy.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, yeah, you're totally right. I mean, like, and just the, you know, short amount of time and it's just.
Yeah.
You know, all this.
It's crazy.
It's just. Change and it seems like it's accelerating. Maybe it's just perception, but it's
it's accelerating. It's gone, as we said, it's gone from nothing. Yeah. There was not a single person in the world making money from online videos 10 years ago.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and
I was
now,
listening to a thing with
people are making millions of dollars.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And I was listening to a thing with Thomas Friedman. You know, the he's a New York Times article. A columnist, he wrote "The World Is Flat," and he was doing an interview, and he's like, go back and read that because it was written in 2004. He said I had to go back and read it when I was writing my most recent book, and he said, yeah, I flipped the index and I looked up Facebook, and it wasn't there.
Yeah,
you know, and it's just like holy shit. It's just like that doesn't exist. You know, like it's just like how these things affect our lives these days. You know, there's always been this churn, but it feels different. You know. Maybe it's always been like this, but for now, we're allowed to marvel at it. So, Anyways, I should go off and take an Uber to my dinner reservation. So,
cool. So, does this thing always work? Does somebody eventually always show up, or does it?
Yeah, there's a lot of drama with it where there's like surge pricing. If everybody needs a cab at once, they charge more. But in general, I mean, I've had positive.
Like as in everyone's coming out of a show or something. There's 10,000 people out of a stadium, and
I would say New Year's Eve, right? Everybody needs a cab ride home because they've been drinking champagne. That would be like an example. But anyways, it's cool service. I mean, people now they use Uber as an example for other stuff, right? They say it for like if it was like test equipment, right? They'd say, "Oh, this is I have a new startup called Testy," and which would be a terrible.
It's the Uber of test equipment.
Exactly, but that would be a terrible name. Don't anyone start a startup called Testy.
Or the plural version,
Testies.
Testies.
We're 10 year olds.
It's probably already taken testies.com is no doubt taken.
Yeah, it probably is. Or probably the LY domain, the Testly, right? Oh man. All right, Dave. Oh, well, we will make more more wiener jokes next week. How about that?
Catch you then.
All right, man. See ya.